Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and this is the Squiggly Careers Podcast, where each week we take a different topic to do with work and explore the ups and the downs and some ideas for action and tools to try out that we hope will help you to navigate your career with a bit more confidence, clarity and control. It's National Careers Week here in the UK, which has inspired us to do a few different sorts of episodes. We've had some squiggly career conversations with a few really fascinating and interesting people to give you a window into their world of work, which is always such a good thing to do. Our conversations this week include Helen talking to Jim McLeod, a Royal Navy Rear Admiral, who shares some incredible examples of how he's squiggled and stayed. You can hear me talking to Steph Douglas, the founder of Don't Buy Her Flowers, about her sort of entrepreneurial life and the realities of running her business and how that works and at times doesn't work with the rest of her life. She's very honest and fun, so really worth listening to that. And you can hear Helen chatting to BBC journalist Simon Mundy about progression and how to create, not wait for, career opportunities. And today you're going to hear my conversation with Eric Sim. Eric is brilliant. His career story is full of resilience and bravery. And our conversation together, I think, will always stay with me. I will always remember some of the advice and the words of wisdom and just his general calm and collected approach to our conversation together. He's got a brilliant story, which I don't want to share too much of because I'd much rather you listen to it and hear it straight from Eric. But I do really appreciate him taking the time to talk to us. He was actually recommended to us by one of our Squiggly Career community. So I did some research. He does some incredible writing on LinkedIn, where he has over 2 million followers. And so I got in touch with him out of the blue. So I'm very grateful for him saying yes and then making time for us completely out of his time zone, given he lives in a very different part of the world. And so I hope you enjoy learning more about him and his career story. So Eric, thank you so much for joining us today for this Squiggly Career conversation. I can't wait to find out more about you and your career.
Sarah, thank you for inviting me. It's really a delight to be on your show.
So we thought it might be good to just start from the start of your career. And I know you've squiggled in lots of different directions and we're going to explore loads of those things together. But what was your first job? How did you get that first job? Maybe share a bit about how you started in the world of work.
My very first job is when I was around 10 years old. Mm-hmm. My father sells noodle. He's a street food. I mean, he was a street food vendor. So he has been selling prawn noodle for 30 years. And when I was young, so I was like brought to the store to help out cleaning the tables. Then from cleaning the tables to washing the bowls, taking orders, and eventually cooking, slicing the chili, and without knowing, rubbing my eyes.
Oh no.
So I get all that. So I helped him for 10 years before he finally decided to retire. When I was 17, I was able to cook for myself.
And then when you sort of then maybe either left home or went into the first job that you did that was perhaps sort of outside of your family, what did that look like? What did you want to do? Where were you hoping to start your career? And did it work out as you'd hoped?
I did a bartending job in a nightclub when I was in the university to make some pocket money, because by the time when I was like year two in my university days. After that, I was studying engineering. After that, I thought, maybe let's try something else. Let's try banking. And I knew nothing about banking. My friend, my classmate, engineering classmate, he told me, hey, do you know that DBS Bank came to the campus for campus recruitment? I said, I didn't know about it. You know, we are in engineering. So obviously they didn't come to engineering department. I said, why don't you write in? So I wrote in unsolicited to say that I'm Ericsson. I'm going to graduate from engineering. I'm interested in banking, marketing, or sales, or risk management, anything. Just give me a chance. And they call me up for interview. So I met up with the hiring manager directly. 2 weeks later, they give me a call to say that, yeah, just come down for one more round of HR interview. And after that, I got a job.
And so when you're thinking back now over your career, because as we'll discuss, you've done lots of really interesting different things. You've lived in different places as well. What feels like the bravest decision you've made in your career in hindsight? I don't know whether it felt brave at the time or not, but when you're now looking back over what you've done so far, was there a moment where it did feel like you were doing something very different or really far out of your comfort zone?
In my first job, being an engineer with zero social skills, I didn't do well because I didn't know how to treat people. I didn't communicate well. So after 2 years, I thought I need to reset. I said, how can I reset? If I go and find another job, it's going to be the same thing. Why don't I go and do a master's in a country that I've never been? So I chose Lancaster University in the UK. Mm-hmm. I took all my savings, but my savings was only enough for about 10 months.
Right.
This is a one-year course. So I said, should I go or should I not go? I decided that I should go while I'm still young. If for the very last 1 month I didn't have money, I'll just borrow, you know. Yeah. So I went. I didn't think that it was very risky or rash. But now looking back, you know, to take all your entire savings.
Yeah.
And then still short of 1 month to live in a country that I've never been to the West at that point in time. Yeah. You know, I was like 27 years old, hardly travel, a short time in Hong Kong. That's it. Now I'm going to a place and I'm not sure whether I can get used to the cold, sure whether I can complete my study. And, you know, I'm changing from a job that comes with stable monthly income to one where I'm paying and there's no guarantee I get a job after that. Lancaster is not your Oxbridge or Ivy League that you are guaranteed a job.
I think that sounds very brave when you start to as well put all of the different factors together. You know, you'd never been to the West before. You didn't know if you were going to get a job. You were using up all of your money. It's sort of the perfect storm of things that must have felt really hard. Did anything surprise you about that year? So when you were, you know, in the north of England, which, as you said, is pretty cold, with lots of people that you'd not met before, studying in a way that was probably very new to you. And, you know, leaving behind, I'm guessing, kind of friends and family as well as the stability. What surprised you about that experience?
In Singapore, you know, the focus is on academic and, you know, you need to study hard, get your grades. You know, the typical poor family kind of a route to get out of poverty, study hard, get your grades, get a job. So there was not much of entertainment. So when I went to Lancaster, the thing they welcome you is this pub crawl.
Okay, you got inducted by going to lots of pubs.
Yeah, so pub crawl. So I say, yeah, you know, we can go to a pub. But I didn't know there are pubs in the school. I never experienced that where the pub is in the school. So I said, wow, so it's really living a life. So not just studying, because going to a pub is not just for drinking, it's also socializing. And so That's where I can improve my social skills, how to talk to people. And these are very important because later on, when I go to work, I need these skills to do the selling to customers, to build the relationship with my colleagues.
Yeah. And as you then came out of that experience, kind of going almost like back to studying for the year, and then you started to progress into the roles that then you went into, what was a tough moment? Or we sometimes describe them as knotty moments. So in your squiggly career, we know there's no such thing as a straight line to success. Everyone has these knotty moments where it's really tough. Things feel hard and we find our way through those moments, but they are difficult. And sometimes, I'm sure if someone went onto your LinkedIn profile when I was doing my research before our interview today, they would look at you and they'd be like, wow, he's got all this incredible experience. He's so successful. He now runs his own organization. So all of these very shiny things, and lots of people will think, well, I could never do what Eric's done. I could never do that. So I think it's always nice for our listeners to learn a bit about something that perhaps didn't quite go to plan, but then also feel reassured that you found your way through that.
Yeah, there's one which is more recent now to bring people to my most recent banking career. So I joined one of the international investment bank. And in our industry, we call them bulge brackets bank. So there are nine of them. So when I first joined, I told my boss that I've been teaching all along, you know, in the university. I like to continue that. So this was like maybe 3 months into the job. And I need to fly back to Singapore. I was based in Hong Kong then. That job was MD position, managing director position in top investment bank. I say I need to fly back and I will be receiving a teaching fees. So when I do work outside, I want to get the blessing of my boss and the proper approval. I didn't want to do it quietly. He told me that, Eric, you are moonlighting. So obviously he's not really happy for me to do so, which is rightly so. I mean, banks pay me enough.
Yeah.
So now, what should I do? Do I, for the sake of a couple of thousand dollars, strain the relationship with my boss, potentially risking MD position in a top investment bank? I just joined the bank for 3 months, right? It's not a good way to create an impression. Then I decided that I should continue and insist. So I say, okay, if you're not happy with me receiving these teaching fees, I'll ask them to just reimburse my flight and my accommodation. So he said, okay. So I got the school to say, don't pay me, but just reimburse. It's a, you know, I get slightly less. I say, I'm okay. But I want to get paid. I want to make it proper. And finally, he approved. I got HR to approve. I got compliance to approve. And I did that and I continued my teaching. The relationship, I don't know what, how it has been, because if I didn't do that, would it be better or worse?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But I'm glad I did, because I then went on to become an adjunct associate professor at one of the top Hong Kong university. And because I continue, that's why I can do a pivot into a portfolio career, which is what I'm doing now. Teaching in the university, training, you know, writing book, doing key opinion leader marketing. So had I said that, okay, maybe now is not the time. Maybe I try next year. Maybe I could, you know, one way is to tell the university to say that I just joined this bank. This is one of the biggest job. I cannot teach for you this year. Let me come back next year. Chances are they would have found somebody. And come the following year, right, they will use that somebody instead of coming back to me. Then my teaching will stop. And if my teaching stop, it is difficult to go to and then say, hey, can you make me adjunct associate professor? Because you haven't been teaching for a few years. How can we know that you can still teach? So that is a naughty moment, which I gladly untie.
I think what's so interesting about that story is you didn't necessarily know at that time you were going to do that career pivot. But what you did sound to me, certainly like you were very confident about, is I'm guessing how much you enjoyed teaching. It sounded like you got a lot of satisfaction from that and you knew it was important to you as part of your learning and your development. So sometimes there's a great phrase that someone I work with introduced me to, where he said, at times we need to be stubbornly adaptive. So, and I think that you just described yourself being stubbornly adaptive because you held on to what was really important to you, which is, okay, well, I do still want that teaching to happen. I don't want to let go of that, but I will adapt in terms of what it looks like to make that happen. And if that means in the short term, I don't get the fees or we do it in a slightly different way, I will adapt around it, but I'm going to hold on to that thing that's really important to me. And with that potential jeopardy of thinking, I'm not sure what this means in terms of my relationships. But I think when you stay true to what's important to you, it gives you that confidence to keep going, perhaps.
Yes. And I managed to stay for 6 years. And then, you know, those type of position, if your boss doesn't like you, you normally get fired.
Yes.
And sometimes it's also to show them, this is also how I negotiate with client, right? The client will say no to you to say that we are not going to hire your bank to do our corporate finance acquisition or fundraising. But it is me with this attitude, I will restructure the deal. I will say, if you don't like this target, maybe I'll give you another target. If you don't like to buy companies in China, maybe I'll bring you to US to buy companies. There's always people saying no to us. And I cannot accept no all the time. Otherwise, I'll not go anywhere.
And you mentioned there your relationship with managers and bosses. How important have those people been as part of your career? Or have there been other people, maybe informal mentors or families or friends, who have been those critical people for you as you've been developing throughout your career?
Bosses are very important, and good bosses don't come easily. I think if one person has one good boss in his or her career, you consider yourself lucky. So I consider myself lucky. When I graduated from Lancaster University, thinking, now I spend my money, I work hard, I took the right bet. Let me go to London and interview with some international bank. Maybe I can get a job in London. I went there wearing my suit. I didn't have a suit from Singapore. We didn't need to wear suit at that time. So I went to Oxfam to buy a secondhand suit. And obviously, I didn't get my size, so I need to buy something like this, two size bigger.
Oh, no.
So I'm wearing this suit. And when you go to Oxfam, you don't get a full suit. You just get a jacket. Yeah. I just make do with my own pants. A matched suit, oversized, just came from Singapore, studying for like 8 to 9 months now, going to London for interview. I think I went for 5 different companies, but none of them gave me the second round. I wouldn't give myself the second round. So no choice, no job, no money. So I came back to Singapore. So when I came back to Singapore, it was 1997, and that is the Asian financial crisis. Currency depreciated some 20 to 30%. And there was no job, not the job that I wanted. I wanted to work in the front office. And because the market was volatile, some bank lost money at that time. They were looking for risk manager to manage the risk better. So I changed tack and say, okay, let me change to risk management and see what jobs I can find. So within a month, I got 2 offers, one from Standard Chartered Bank, one from a bank bigger than Standard Chartered Bank. I later on chose Standard Chartered, a smaller bank, not as sexy a role, but because the boss believed in me. The boss believed in me, and I chose him. His name is Prasanna Thombre. And he believed in me so much that when I give an answer that is obviously wrong, he wants to know my thinking behind. But he said that this is so obviously wrong, and I know that, Eric, you normally don't give this type of answer. Tell me your rationale. So when I tell him the rationale, the obviously wrong turns out to be right. So that gives me a lot of confidence to share my opinion. Because before that, I have this inferiority complex. I have a lot of self-doubt. I'm not sure I wouldn't say it. But with him, I suddenly become another person. And that built a very strong foundation for my career afterwards.
And what a brilliant example of a leader as well, being vulnerable enough and creating an environment of trust where he then says to you, not you're wrong, but I'm curious to know how you got to that conclusion, or like, tell me more about that. And just demonstrating that ability to want to understand, to ask really good questions. And then, of course, it's the output of that, the outcome of that is then you do an even better job. Because as you said, it built your confidence, your manager also being open to changing their mind, to hearing a different point of view and perspective. And I do think for all of us, when we work for those brilliant bosses, what we see is role modeling. We see role modeling of really like great behaviours that bring the best out in all of us. And then I think when we move into manager positions ourselves, we then think, that's what I want to do. I know how important it is to behave in a way where, if that's the behaviours I want to see from my team, that has got to come from me. It's got to start with me.
You're so right, Sarah. So very key to, instead of always looking for the best, biggest company, you know, highest title or highest salary, is just look for a boss, because the kind of confidence and foundation that you can build for yourself under such a boss means your market value will go up. It means you can command a much higher salary later on.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now, you have done so many interesting and different things in your career. So whether that's writing books, or as you said, you've now got more of a portfolio career, doing lots of different things, doing speaking. You know, you write some brilliant articles on LinkedIn that I was reading. You know, you've worked in big investment banks. When you reflect, what do you feel most proud of? Is there a sort of standout thing that you feel proud of, or maybe a couple of things that you could share with our listeners?
After I left banking, I'm very happy that, you know, people still come to me, whether they are junior or senior. I mean, the last thing I want is, when I held the MD title, you know, in the investment bank, obviously, if I decide their bonus, if I decide their performance appraiser, they will treat me nice, right? So the last thing I want is when I no longer hold that title, then people disappear or they treat you differently. But no. I'm still very happy. The people who treated me nice are still treating me very nice. And people who didn't treat me nice are also now treating me nice. Maybe I'm no longer a threat to them because, you know, I'm no longer competing with them in the same industry. So this is something that I feel I can be proud of. That means I must have treated them well. I must have treated them with respect. I didn't make them unnecessarily come back to work, you know, on a Sunday night, which is very common in banking. And people who I thought didn't like me when I was working in banking, it could be because, you know, we are fighting for deals or competing, but now they have changed, you know. Now, you know, once those competition goes away, yeah, they come back, they ask me out for lunch, or, you know, they even buy my books. I've got people who buy 10 copies to say, hey, Eric, here to support you. I just bought 10 copies of your books.
That's so nice. It just shows the importance of investing and building relationships and how those relationships often go way beyond the role that you're in that moment, because you never quite know where those relationships might pop up again or they might take you. And I think I had a similar fear when I moved out of my working in big organisations. Like yourself, I worked for Barclays, I worked in banking, and then I worked for a big British food retailer for a while. And I remember first going into, as you've described, we're probably not quite as portfolio as you, but to run my own company, thinking, does that mean that no one's going to be interested in me anymore? And you have that fear, don't you, that those relationships are built on the role and the job titles that you had. And then what you realise with a bit of perspective is, of course, all of those brilliant people who supported you then are going to support you now. And I think we had that exact same experience of, if anything, those people support you more because they want to see you succeed and they believe in you. And so I think it just reminds us that, you know, investing in our career community, which sometimes I think, you know, has felt hard over the last couple of years with the pandemic, and everybody has very busy day jobs, and, you know, we can always prioritize those tasks that we've got to tick off our to-do lists, but just spending some time in your days and your weeks just building those relationships in a less transactional way, in a more just being really curious, having conversations, you know, exactly like the conversation we're having today, where I'm just really curious to learn more about your career. There's not an output or an outcome that we have to get to. It's just about learning, and then you never know where those relationships might take you. And so we always ask this question for every guest that we have on the podcast, which is, has there been any advice that you've been given in your career that's really stuck with you, that you found really helpful? Or do you just have advice that you could share with our listeners that you just think is really useful as people are thinking a bit about their careers and where their squiggly careers could take them?
Yeah. I think social capital. Social capital is your currency to success. Social capital is the goodwill that you have accumulated over the years. So whether you are buying coffee or lunches, whether you are helping other people. So every time you help somebody, every time you buy lunch or take somebody out, you are kind of depositing your social capital in a bank. And this will earn you interest. The interest is going to be very minimal if you withdraw within a short time. Yeah. But if you let it sit for 3, 5, 10 years, it can really become a big chunk. And then one day when you need it, you can use it all in one go. So you can be buying all your coffee and lunches over the years, but you don't ask for anything. But one day, like for example, in my case, last December, I published a book. And when I go on my social media and say, I just published a book, the people who I've treated them with respect and well, they come back and buy my book. It could be somebody I treated well 5, 10, 15 years ago, even 20. So it's so amazing. People from my school days, my classmates, my army days, they all start appearing, you know. I say, where have you been? You know, they say, oh, I've been reading your LinkedIn articles. But I say, you never engage. I say, it's not convenient because now they are senior. They are CEO of some companies. It's not appropriate for them to engage or comment, but they are reading, and when it's time, they return the favors, so to speak. But for us, I think now that we've gone so long, it's no longer doing the returning favor. It's just the right thing to do.
Yeah. I think what you've described there so brilliantly is that giving mindset. So the research that people like Adam Grant over at Wharton has done on if you give without keeping score. So you just think, well, how can I help? How can I give? And that giving could be, I'm just going to buy you a cup of coffee, or I'm just going to give you 10 minutes, or you've got a question and I'm going to try and help you with that. And we don't worry about an immediate return on that giving, then it pays off. We sometimes describe it as career karma. Just trust that just by doing the right thing will then happen to you.
Yes, karma. I wouldn't call it career karma because this can be life karma.
Yeah, you're right. It's probably bigger than that. Yeah.
Sometimes people just help you back, you know, sometimes you want a referral, you wanted to find out about some information. It could be something for your family. So your kids need to go to some schools, moving to another country. If you got some social capital, you can just call, hey, what school should I get my kids into? Or yeah. Which apartment should I rent? Which area should I stay? So all of those, if you have social capital, is simple. But if you don't have, you go through some agents, then they may not give you the best advice.
That's such a lovely way of thinking about it. I've not heard it described as social capital before, but that idea of sort of making those almost investments really makes sense to me. And as you say, it's probably good life advice, not only career advice. So Eric, if people wanted to find out more about you and the work that you do, because there are lots of places they could go, perhaps you could just share a bit about the company that you run and your books and where you'd like to point people towards if people are thinking, wow, Eric's been really fascinating and now I sort of want to dive a bit deeper into the work that he does.
Sure. I'm the founder of Institute of Life. Our mission is to train professionals to be successful at work and in life. I write on LinkedIn for the last 7 years, giving career advice, life advice, taking advantage of our weakness and failure. A lot of people wanted to dig more, and it's very difficult to search for my articles that I've written more than a year ago. So I've written this book. I've put all the best bit into this book. It has got 66 bite-sized chapters. Each chapter with a story and with an actionable tip that the reader can take away. So if anybody wants to know more about me, yeah, come to LinkedIn, you know, pop by, say hi. If you want to read a couple of chapters, go to Amazon, look for Small Action by Eric Sim. In the Kindle version, I have made 5 chapters for free. You can read the introduction plus 5 chapters. And that alone is already enough to give you a few tips to get going. You don't have to buy the book, you know, just read the 5 chapters. And yeah, with this, you will be able to know more about me and my work. And if you want to join like the community, you can follow this hashtag 66 Small Actions on LinkedIn or Instagram. Yeah, if you Google or you search, you will see my followers, my community, talking about the book and talking about the action they have taken from the book. So you don't just, when you come to me, it's not just me. You got a whole community of people, of like-minded people who love self-development, who love building relationship, who understand the meaning of social capital.
Brilliant. I think everybody who listens to this podcast, if you've chosen to listen to our podcast, they are people who love self-development. And so we will put all of the links to everything that Eric just talked through in the show notes. So if you just scroll down, we'll make that all clickable. We'll put that in our LinkedIn when we post today's show. And we'll also do that on Instagram as well. So we'll make it really easy for you to find all of those things that Eric described. But for today, I just wanted to say thank you so much to Eric for taking the time to talk to us. I was saying to him at the start of our conversation that he was actually recommended to us by one of our Squiggly Career community and podcast listeners. And then obviously I did lots of research and got in touch with Eric. So this is the first time that we've connected. And I feel like we've got lots in common in terms of what we're trying to do, making careers better for everyone and sharing your ideas and your insights so generously with everyone. So thank you so much for your time.
And thank you, Sarah, for inviting me. I really enjoy myself today. And to the listener out there, I'll see you on LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you're inspired to explore how you could develop in different directions, there are loads of free courses and learning available on the Government Skills for Life website. And that's gov.uk/skills for life. Put the link in the show notes, and it's really worth having a quick click around because there's loads of good courses out there from things like the basics of coding, learning about green skills, run by brilliant experts and very credible universities from all across the UK, different training providers. Most of the courses can be done remotely and they're pretty flexible and free, which is a good combination. So worth having a look at that if that feels relevant for you. That's all for this week. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode, and we'll be back with you again soon. Bye for now.